Good afternoon all. In my presentation today, I will be talking about the Council of Europe and the death penalty. This paper is a spin-off from my PhD thesis in which I was looking at how the Council of Europe makes use of human rights norms, and in particular the norm on the abolition of the death penalty, in its own claims to legitimacy as Europe's human rights arbiter. But on reflection of the last 4 days, and after having read papers from the other panellists, I realised that there's more to the Council of Europe's normal entrepreneurial role in respect to death penalty than the issue of legitimacy. So the more I reflect on this, the less and less I think about the issue of legitimacy. So for the purposes of this paper, I'll be talking about intergovernmental authorisation and not just the question of legitimacy. Actually, it's much more open, and I think there are much more issues to be addressed in respect to the Council of Europe's role as a normal entrepreneur in respect to the death penalty than the issue of legitimacy itself. So for the purposes of this paper, as was mentioned, this gives a first case study into how the Council of Europe actually produces human rights norms. And the reason why I thought this would be quite interesting to look at is because, firstly, there is very, very little that's been written on the Council of Europe. I identified 3 or 4 papers which are interesting, but don't actually examine the issue of how the Council of Europe actually produces norms. They discuss the issue of bargaining within the Council of Europe, but they don't actually look at concrete case studies as to how this takes place. And then secondly, on the issue of the death penalty itself, there's a very good thesis that was done at the University of Warwick in 2008 that looks at the Council of Europe and the death penalty. But the author hardly makes use of any archival research for his thesis. And then another issue, it relates to the idea of normal entrepreneurs within the Council of Europe. Much has been said about the Assembly. Very, very little has been said about the Committee of Ministers and how the different institutions interact amongst themselves in respect to this norm. So for this presentation, I'll firstly discuss this issue of intergovernmental authorisation as enabling and constraining and how I understand it in respect to the Council of Europe. I'll provide you with a very brief overview of how the death penalty has come to be abolished within the Council of Europe, and then discuss this in much greater detail in respect to intergovernmental authorisation as constraining and enabling. And then later on, I'll be discussing a few other issues that are relevant to this issue of the death penalty and the Council of Europe's role as a normal entrepreneur. So, firstly, intergovernmental authorisation as constraining and enabling. Intergovernmental authorisation as constraining in respect to the Council of Europe, I understand this to be the manner in which member state authorisation has acted as a hindrance to the Council of Europe's attempts to adopt a prescriptive stance in favour of abolishing the death penalty. And then intergovernmental authorisation as enabling. This refers to the manner in which member state authorisation actually acts as a catalyst in support of regional legislation aimed at abolishing the death penalty in Council of Europe member states. Now, in respect to how the death penalty has come to be abolished, in the little literature that there is in respect to the Council of Europe and the death penalty, the starting point is often 1973, when the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe issued its first motion for a resolution on abolishing the death penalty within Council of Europe member states. And this was my thinking when I started the research, but after having slogged away in the archives in Strasbourg, I realised that there was actually much more to it than the 1973 starting point. This issue actually extends back to the drafting of the Convention in 1949, and then later on in 1958 with the work that was done by the European Committee on Crime Problems. And in my own research, I do not look at the issue of the death penalty in respect to the drafting of the convention, because the thesis that was done at Warwick focuses specifically on the Council of Europe's mandate between 1949 and 1951 on the issue of the death penalty and the convention. So my own research, my starting point is in 1958, when the former Directorate for Legal Affairs actually begins to consider the issue of the death penalty in respect to the issue of criminal justice in European countries. And this is an issue that was taken on by the European Committee on Crime Problems, which was created in 1957-1958 at the Committee of Ministers' request. And within the ECCP, you have the creation of subcommittee number one, which specifically deals with this issue of the problem of the death penalty in European countries. And at the Committee of Ministers' request, it was mandated to undertake, and I quote, a purely descriptive study of the present situation in regard to the use and non-use of the death penalty in Western Europe. So already you have this attempt to distinguish between a descriptive approach to examining the issue of the death penalty and a more prescriptive approach, which would involve coming up with some sort of recommendation as to whether the death penalty should be abolished, or at least try and minimise the number of instances in which it is put into use. So this research was conducted by the subcommittee number one, but what is interesting to note here is that it's not actually conducted within the context of the Council of Europe. It's conducted on behalf of the Council of Europe by the French Centre for Comparative Law, to which the then Council of Europe rapporteur on the death penalty, Mark Ansel, was loosely affiliated. So already you have issues relating the Council of Europe's neutrality in respect to both the death penalty and the extent to which it could actually interfere with what was going on within the member states themselves. And during this time, there was this fear within the Committee of Ministers that the ECCP might actually try and adopt a prescriptive approach which was in favour of abolishing the death penalty within Council of Europe member states. And this fear was actually well-founded, because in October of 1963, the minutes of its meeting actually show that subcommittee number one put forward an initiative to the ECCP, so the larger body, and I quote, to prepare a draft recommendation concerning the removal of the death penalty from the penal code in connection with all crimes to which it was not applied in fact. So the envisaged outcome of this proposed recommendation was twofold. On the one hand, for member states that still retain the death penalty in statute but no longer applied it for capital crimes, the ECCP would call for its de jure abolition during peacetime. And on the other hand, for member states that still retain the death penalty but do not impose it on all capital crimes, the ECCP would call for its removal on crimes to which it was no longer applied. However, what we see in the archival research is that this very, very bold attempt to adopt a prescriptive approach aimed at gradually abolishing the death penalty, or at least diminishing its use and legality within member states, was very short-lived, because in September 1965, the Committee of Ministers got wind of what was happening and then immediately revoked Subcommittee Number 1's mandate on the death penalty. It was disbanded. At this stage, the Council of Europe no longer has a mandate to examine the issue of the death penalty. So you have a lull between 1965 and 1973, where nothing was happening within the Council of Europe in respect to the death penalty. And it was only in 1973 that you have the Parliamentary Assembly coming in and putting forward a motion for a resolution to abolish the death penalty. But even then, you have wrangling within the Assembly itself. Most people think that, of course, the Assembly, guardian of human rights within the Council of Europe, of course they would agree to provide, to put forward a norm abolishing the death penalty. But this wasn't the case, because although in May 1973 this motion was put forward, you have the Assembly mandating its own Legal Affairs Committee to investigate the status of the death penalty within Council of Europe member states in 1974, so roughly a year later. And in January 9th of 1975, the Legal Affairs Committee refuses to submit a report on the subject, and it offered two reasons for this refusal. On the one hand, it argued that when faced with the threat of terrorism, European public opinion would oppose any attempt to abolish the death penalty. And of course, during this time, you have terrorist threats in Turkey from the organization which was led by Abdullah Öcalan, which in 1978 became the Kurdish Workers' Party, so the PKK. And then in the United Kingdom, you've obviously got the issue of the IRA. And then the second reason that was put forward by the Legal Affairs Committee relates to whether the Committee of Ministers, so the Intergovernmental Committee of Ministers, would actually welcome such a resolution or recommendation from the from the Parliamentary Assembly, which was likely to infringe on member state sovereignty and supposedly threaten national security. So at this refusal, the Assembly's rapporteur on the death penalty, Heinrich Leibgard, resigned in January 1976, and in May of 1976, this issue was duly struck off the Assembly agenda. So there again, you have no Council of Europe mandate on the issue of the death penalty. And it was not until 1978, so 2 years later, that the issue was actually reinstated onto the Assembly agenda. And that was only after an international conference which was held in Stockholm by NGOs on the abolition of the death penalty. But despite this, there was still a need for what I call two catalysts that were necessary to provide the Assembly with an additional impetus to actually develop a Council of Europe norm on the abolition of the death penalty. The first catalyst was in the form of Resolution Number 4, which was adopted at the 11th Conference of European Ministers for Justice on the 21st of June 1978. And this resolution emerged from a memorandum that was put forward by the Austrian delegation to the conference on the question of the death penalty. And so both the memorandum and the resolution urged, I quote, "the Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe to study the possibilities for the elaboration of new and appropriate European standards concerning the abolition of the death penalty in Europe." And the second catalyst, so an additional catalyst, would come in the form of new Council of Europe membership. So between 1978, you have Portugal, 1976 and 1978, you have Portugal, Spain, and Liechtenstein joining the Council of Europe, and these are states that do not employ the death penalty. So this was an additional push to the to the Parliamentary Assembly, providing them with additional impetus to actually renew calls for the Council of Europe to actually do something about this issue of the death penalty and its possible abolition, or at least providing the necessary foundation for later protocol abolishing the death penalty in peacetime. So you have this combination of new abolitionist member states, Portugal, Spain and Liechtenstein, and interministerial consensus as a result of Resolution 4, which provided the Assembly with the necessary impetus to renew calls for the abolition of the death penalty. But they had to wait until September 1981, when the Committee of Ministers actually assembled, representatives of the 18 member states actually assembled to examine the issue of the Austrian memorandum. And there they were to decide whether to provide new ad hoc terms of reference to the Steering Committee on Human Rights in respect to drafting a new additional protocol to the Convention on the Peacetime Abolition of the Death Penalty. And it was only on the 25th of September 1981 that the Minister's deputies actually mandated the Steering Committee on Human Rights to prepare an additional protocol to the Convention with a view to abolish the death penalty in peacetime. But what is actually quite interesting to note is that although they came to this agreement, the minister's deputies decided not to communicate their decision to the Assembly. So in the same conclusions from this meeting, you see that the chair of the deputies actually stating that when called, when the secretary or chairman of the Committee of Ministers is called to report to the Parliamentary Assembly, that should merely state that this resolution was still being considered and in a very serious matter by the Committee of Ministers and its subordinate organs. And then when you look at the minutes from the Steering Committee of Human Rights from October 1981, they actually show that the Minister's deputies had actually prohibited that the Steering Committee on Human Rights should publish its terms of reference. But despite this, the ministers came to an agreement, and in December of 1982, additional Protocol 6 to the Convention was opened for signature. At their meeting, they decided to open the Convention for signature on the 28th of April 1983, and it entered into force in 1985. So you have this lull between 1983 and 1989, when nothing is happening within the Council of Europe in respect to the death penalty. But what is interesting is that within the established Council of Europe member states, you have attempts to actually incorporate this regional development into domestic jurisdiction. So you have the abolition of the death penalty within Council of Europe member states, those who had not done so, or the introduction of a moratorium. So The next impetus, the most important impetus, comes in October of 1994, in which an additional Assembly resolution provides the necessary impetus for further amending the Convention. So in 1983, Protocol 6, which leads to the abolition of the death penalty in peacetime, but then you also need an additional protocol in respect to the abolition of the death penalty during times of war. And again, you see Intergovernmental Committee of Ministers actually refusing to actually do anything about the issue of the death penalty, and merely constraining itself to asking member states to honour moratoria on the death penalty. And it was only in November of 2000 that you have European Ministerial Conference on Human Rights in Rome, which actually proposes resolution number 2, asking the Committee of Ministers to actually consider a new additional protocol to the Convention, which would exclude the possibility of maintaining the death penalty. So within this context, you see this wrangling between the Assembly and the Committee of Ministers, in which, on the one hand, the Parliamentary Assembly would put forward an attempt to abolish the death penalty, and the Committee of Ministers would actually provide some sort of constraint in respect to putting this, carrying this issue forward. So we saw that in 1965 in respect to the ECCP, again in the late 1970s in respect to the Assembly's own attempts to push forward a resolution in a recommendation to the Committee of Ministers in view of abolishing the death penalty. And this continues again in from 1994, between 1994 and 2000. And it was only in 2000 that the Swedes proposed a proposal in view of the blanket abolition of the death penalty, so both peacetime and wartime. And it was only in 2001 that the Committee of Ministers reluctantly concedes and issues terms of reference to elaborate an additional protocol to the Convention. And I think I'm fast running out of time. But very, very briefly, other factors that that have come into play in respect to the abolition of the death penalty, I think it's firstly important not to just look at the Committee of Ministers as a body and their own response in respect to the issue of the death penalty, but to also go within the Committee of Ministers and examine who is saying what. For those who received a copy of my paper, they would note that I made a point of highlighting the importance of Sweden, all the rapporteurs that the Council of Europe has had in respect to the death penalty, apart from one, were all Swedish. So my question is, in respect to the issue of the death penalty, is this an issue that was put forward by the organisation in response to what member states had wanted, or is this an issue that has come from within the organisation itself and wanting to impose on member states? Okay. And then just very, very finally, I think it's also very interesting to look at the issue of the East-West divide in respect to the Council of Europe's normal entrepreneurial role on the death penalty, because to what extent can you say that the Council of Europe is a normal entrepreneur in respect to Western Europe, which is obviously very, very applicable when you look at Eastern Europe. And I will stop there, and you can discuss any other points and questions.